You're listening to a special podcast produced by UMFM 101.5 in partnership with the Winnipeg Folk Festival. Running Thursday, July 11th through Sunday, July 14th at picturesque Birds Hill Park, Winnipeg Folk Festival is a celebration of people and music that has been one of North America's premier outdoor music festivals for over 40 years. I'm Michael Elves, host of Thank God It's Free Range, and this episode spotlights Kaya Cater. Cater, a folk musician whose music has branched out to include many more genres since studying film composition, released her new album Strange Medicine earlier this year. Cater will be performing at 4:30 p.m. on Sunday, July 14th at Spruce Hollow. For the full lineup, a complete list of set times, to purchase tickets, and for more information on the Winnipeg Folk Festival, visit winnipegfolkfestival.ca. Well, coming to Birds Hill Park to play the Winnipeg Folk Festival, touring on the strength of a new record called Strange Medicine, Kaya Cater joins me on the show. Welcome, Kaya.
Thanks, Michael, for having me on the show.
My pleasure. So I was reading some interviews you did in the lead up to this record. You had booked time off March 2020 to work on a record.
Yeah, I did.
But this isn't that record.
I mean, I think partially it is, like, it's kind of funny. I was hitting a point of exhaustion from my previous record, Grenades. You know, I'd been on tour for almost 2 years by the time I took time off to write. And I just knew that I needed a break of some kind, not quite like a 2.5 year break, but it's so coincided, you know, happened that way. I wrote a little bit during those early months, and then I think realizing that the pandemic lockdowns were going to affect us for years, not months, that kind of switched tactics around. I went into a film composing program at the Canadian Film Center, and I did all sorts of different stuff and a lot of creative things that led me back into writing the record, but from a much different place and with much different interests as well.
So the film composing course was your sourdough bread making?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, a good analogy.
The first few songs then that you wrote during that early period, like, was it like tonally or thematically different? And then something shifted and that's why those aren't songs on this record?
Well, one of them actually is. One of them is called The Internet, and I wrote that in April of 2020, and I think around that time I'd been trying to get away from the banjo and a little bit, and I'd learned Ableton and I was getting into synth stuff and was just trying to do something different. But when I wrote The Internet, which, you know, it's like a folk song in C, I realized that I think a lot of my voice comes from the strength of like the folk idiom. And so I think I realized that I did have a lot more to say as a folk singer still. And that if I was going to go back to the banjo and the acoustic guitar, in what ways could I do that in a way that was like new and exciting to me? And how could I make the banjo feel like a sequencer, for example, which I attempted to do in Montreal, which is one of the other songs in the album.
It's interesting you say that was one that, you know, survived that period, or that you wrote it that early in pandemic, because I think not tonally, but like thematically, it seems to suggest a very now internet, or a relationship with the internet that has maybe been filtered by like coming out of the pandemic. Am I reading too much into that, or like, or did you just kind of forecast some of what's happening in the world within the song very early on in the pandemic?
I mean, I think what I was dealing with was just feelings of frustration of being sort of unable to do, you know, with good reason. And it, you know, I knew that, you know, staying home was going to save a lot of lives and keep the pandemic from claiming even more people. But I think I just realized how much I cherish like the really mundane, simple things, like going for a coffee with a friend, and how on social media, especially, like everything is so curated and I can appear a certain way. Like I can curate my Instagram profile to have like all my successes and, you know, my most impeccable takes, and real life is much messier. And I think we hurt each other, we injure each other, or we make each other laugh, or we do quirky things that we don't even realize we're doing that the people enjoy. And I wonder if like that's part of why TikTok took off, was because at the time TikTok was just like an outlet for people who were stuck at home. And so they were doing these funny things, and maybe it wasn't as performative. I'm not sure, but I think I bristle against this idea that my online persona is really who I am, because I think in reality I'm much more flawed maybe like a lot weirder than I seem online. And also now with AI and with scams becoming more and more complex, I think I'm more and more reticent to share the more personal aspects of my life, because I worry that the internet is forever. And so, yeah, regular everyday interactions become even more precious to me as the years go on.
For sure. Is that something you would wrestle with as a songwriter? Like how much you reveal of yourself within song?
Yeah, all the time. I mean, I think the cool thing about writing about your personal life in your songs is that you can play them live and have people come up to you and tell you that, you know, hey, your song helped me through a really tough time when I lost my mom, or, you know, I even had people writing me during the lockdown saying that my music was helping them, or that they'd started playing the banjo and it was like an activity that they could do every day to stay sane. That was their sourdough starter.
Right.
And so, yeah, I forget the question now. I think we're so deep into.
Well, it's because you were talking about kind of like the songwriting, curatorial or like kind of performative aspects, and then like how much you reveal yourself of like kind of the messy realness, and whether that is something that as a musician you wrestle with, you know, sharing that much of yourself in song, right? Like how much you reveal of yourself mm-hmm. through song. I mean, it's a pretty big picture question. So, I mean, I get, you know, maybe yeah. stabbing at it from the side.
I think it's a balance, right? Because something that I didn't understand at the beginning of this, of my career was if you write this song, to a certain extent, you're going to perform it every night. And are you okay with performing it every night? I think some things that are too personal and raw and that haven't had the time and space to be processed in your life, writing a song about that too early can, for me anyway, can often feel like you're reliving the event as you're singing the song. And so with this record, I was really intentional about focusing on things that I felt that I had done some processing and healing around so that when I did sing them, it felt cathartic and not like, oh my God, yeah, let me retell like the worst, you know, 3 months of my life so far, you know, but I think a lot of songwriters, like you can couch it in metaphor and things. And I really like Adrian Lenker's songwriting because I feel like it's so obscure, but there are so many lines that just like catch me and really make me think about myself. And I think that's the ultimate, I think a songwriter's ultimate goal is to be able to have the listener feel like they see themselves in the song to a certain extent. And it doesn't have to be the whole thing, but it's like one or two lines even. I think that you've done your job.
Did you do a lot of listening during that period of like lockdown, like of artists either you liked and wanted to kind of explore deeper or ones you weren't familiar with? Like, did you find that was something you gravitated to during that period?
Yeah, well, I actually ended up listening to a lot of instrumental music. And I think that was mostly because I was listening to so many podcasts and I was listening to the news a ton. And there's just so many talking heads and so many opinions and so much catastrophizing that I just felt like to be able to zone out of that completely, the only way that I could do it was to listen to a lot of instrumental music. And then film composing, of course, is so heavily instrumental based. And so that was like a really cool refuge of just checking out soundtracks or checking out composers that friends had told me about. And so that's where a lot of my deep listening came from, rather than songwriting. I wasn't even writing songs myself. It was just too overwhelming to try to put what was happening into words. Yeah.
For sure. Listening to a lot of cinematic stuff, did that change kind of the complexion of your songwriting? Did you find that like you were thinking in a different way about song structure or song building when it came time to actually working on Strange Medicine?
Oh yeah, for sure. I think I was a lot more open to detours and to like musical ideas that were outside of the typical form of a song, or like holding a chord for, you know, two bars longer than you think you should, or just kind of like stretching, like taking like the dough of a song and stretching it a little bit and seeing in what ways you can do something a little differently. And that was the nice thing. You know, I've been writing songs for so long that I think I was comfortable. I grew more comfortable with pushing things in new directions or trying new things. Like, for example, my co-producer, Joe Grass, and I, we looked at each other and we were like, well, what if this record has zero electric guitar? Which is not a super novel idea, but I find when you take one element out of something, it makes you work harder to figure out, okay, well, how do we replace that? Like, what else could fill that space? You know, and I think that's what really interested me is, you know, how do you make a folk record, but a folk record that feels like it's been kind of like funneled through a fever dream? You know, what does that sound like? And I think listening to so much instrumental music and listening to so much weird and out there music, like scores that are just drums, you know, like I just felt like my music is like so mainstream if you consider the amount of like new music and experimental jazz and noise. I just felt like there was more that I could be doing with the folk idiom that could challenge me and maybe like make the listener more interested, because our ears predict what happens next. Our ears go like, all right, she's sung two verses, the chorus is going to be next, and then she finishes the chorus, and then I think she's going to go back into the verse. But like, what if there's a totally different chord structure that happens after that? I think that perks up someone's ear, and they go like, oh wow, that's different, or wow, she just made me feel something different, I don't exactly know why.
So the notion of like
And
novelty and structure forces attention.
yeah, novelty and structure forces attention, and also you respond to the song in the same way that like when you are composing for a film, you respond to the scene. You don't just like write something because the structure makes sense. Like, of course, you understand the structure, but you also sort of like follow, you can follow these micro moments in film composing that support a visual story. And so I think in the same way, like I'm writing lyrics that are visual in nature. They're cinematic. And so in what ways can the music support those ideas and like have these little micro moments that are a little bit different than what you would expect?
Speaking of cinematic lyrics, the opening track, "The Witch," as I understand it, based on research or reading that you'd done around the Salem witch trials.
Partly Salem witch trials, partly Macbeth, with the three witches, and partly like Roald Dahl, the witches. Remember that book?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, so I think just thinking about the place that witches occupy in our popular consciousness
Now, was that
in
reading
general.
you did during the pandemic and then that led you to writing this, or had you read it previously and then you just kind of started exploring it in this song? I'm kind of curious about the genesis of writing a song like that.
I mean, I think I watched Joel Coen's remake of Macbeth, which
Oh,
came out in 2021.
the Denzel Washington one?
Did you see that one?
Yes, I did, yeah.
Yeah, do you remember the actress who played the three witches, and she kind of like swooped in and out like a,
I'm
she
trying to
had this
remember because it's
cloak.
Frances McDormand who played his wife, but
Yeah, I
yeah.
can't think of the actress who played the three witches, but she was brilliant. And I think
Oh,
up until
Catherine
that
Hunter.
point, yes, that's right. And I think at that point I hadn't realized or really understood, even though I'd read Macbeth before, like we all have in high school or college, like I hadn't realized that a lot of the iconic witch lines, like double double, toil and trouble, cauldron bubble, something like that, or by the pricking of my thumbs, something wicked this way comes. Like those lines, that feel so Halloween-y, are lines from Macbeth. And I don't know, just thinking about the way that the witch is, she's considered to have this unearthly power of seduction towards men and like a power over them. And then thinking about like those old puritanical tales of mob witch burnings and people accusing each other of being witches, and I think I wanted to write something from the perspective of the person who might be accused of being a witch. Like, how does she feel? And if she is then, this is magical realism here, but like if she's burned at the stake and survives, like what kind of, does she then kind of become supernatural? Like, does she wreak havoc on those who originally accused her of being a witch? And so it's just this kind of like fantastical idea of like, how do I work with ideas of revenge, of puritanical tales. I was thinking a lot about the Scarlet Letter, of mob mentality, things like that.
And if she wasn't a witch before, the calling being called a witch and going through the process of being, shamed for being a witch kind of transforms her.
Exactly.
You enlisted Afi O'Donovan on that track. You have a couple other guest artists. Like, is it just simply like sending them an email, or like, how do you go about, you know, enlisting these people to help you kind of realize these things? And is it obvious when you're writing the song that there's like another voice needed?
Yeah, I think it's obvious. Usually it's obvious in the writing process. Aoife is my friend, and a brilliant, brilliant artist. So I had heard her voice from the beginning of Writing the Witch. She's also from Massachusetts originally, which I hadn't thought of consciously. But then someone pointed out, oh yeah, Aoife's from Massachusetts, and we're talking about, primarily about the Salem witch trials. And she has this beautiful, like, unearthly voice, and she's also such a strong collaborator. And so yeah, I sent her a text and I said, would you have time to do this? And I did the same with Alison Russell, who's also a friend who's staying on in Montreal. And I think a lot of these people, I thought about not only their musicianship, but like their connection to the songs that I was writing about. Alison's from Montreal originally, and she sings a lot about Montreal. And she has this kind of hazy, beautiful voice that I thought would fit well with the song. And then of course, Taj Mahal, the icon, the legend, I asked him to sing on a song called Fedon, which is about a black revolutionary. And Taj, I've been listening to Taj's music since the womb, one of my favorite artists of all time. And he was also one of the first black artists I saw playing the banjo and talking about its West African roots. So, Taj doesn't text because he's 82 years old,
Sure.
but I did write his manager, and I had played his 80th birthday party with him a couple years earlier. So I just wrote his manager and included a letter to Taj about, why I was asking him to sing on this specific song.
Well, it's
Yeah, it was a real exercise in being vulnerable and asking people to be on the record.
Is it I gather a different vulnerability than putting your music out into the world?
Yeah, because these are all people whose artistry I admire and who I have a friendship with. And I think the growth was in being okay with the possibility of a no from people that you really admire. And that had taken like a good bit of work, and understanding that if I was to get a no, it wouldn't be a no to me as a person or to my value as a person. Often when people say no, they're just at capacity and they don't, they can't give anymore. But if you never ask and you assume that the people will say no, then you never give them the opportunity to help you. And I know from my own experience that I love getting that opportunity when people trust me enough to ask me to help them, especially in the music industry, which can be pretty vicious sometimes. I relish that, and that makes me feel good. So yeah, it was just learning to give them the opportunity to say yes to.
Well, that's great you put yourself out there. Before I let you go, I want to get you to pick a track off Strange Medicine we can play for listeners. And if you have a reason why you're picking it or an anecdote about it, we'd love to hear that.
Sure. Well, why don't we play in Montreal? I wrote in Montreal during the pandemic lockdowns in Montreal, and I had the lyrics. They were a little bit sad, and I didn't want to write another sad song, slow, sad song. And so I came up with a banjo lick that felt kind of perky and interesting, and added the lyrics to that. So there you have it.
We'll give that one a listen. Kaya, thanks very much for taking some time to talk. Congrats on the release of the record and looking forward to seeing you at Winnipeg Folk Festival.
Oh, thanks, Michael. Thanks for having me on the show.
Tectonic plates stacked.
Michael Alden, you've been listening to a special podcast spotlighting Kaya Cater, who will be performing on Sunday, July 14th at 4:30 p.m. at Spruce Hollow at the Winnipeg Folk Festival. To hear more featured artists, visit umfm.com and be sure to visit winnipegfolkfestival.ca to get tickets to this great event running July 11th through 14th at Birds Hill Park.